Hello and welcome to Grazia Life Advice, Grazia's podcast. I'm Rhiannon and each week I'll be interviewing women worth listening to and getting them to pass on the six best pieces of advice they've ever been given and the worst piece too. This week we've teamed up with number seven to bring you one of my favourite interviews so far with broadcasting legends Fee Glover and Jane Garvey. Fee and Jane have been broadcasting for the BBC for years and are now both hugely popular, high-profile members of Radio 4's lineup. You may have heard Fee presenting The Listening Project or Jane on Women's Hour. But in recent times they've teamed up to present the podcast Fortunately, where no subject is out of bounds. The interview stars of radio, TV and podcasting, getting them to share stories that they probably should. I'm delighted to say a new series starts this Friday, but I caught up with them before their summer break to talk about motherhood, diversity, trolls, and other stuff like, you know, berets and cheese scones. They were as hilarious as they were insightful. So, over to Fee and Jane. I'm here at New Broadcasting House with BBC legends Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. Hi, guys.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're very well.
Well, we're never entirely well, are we?
We're a bit hot.
Yeah.
It is so warm, isn't it?
It's the worst summer, in all seriousness, to be edging towards 50. You know, it's hot on the inside, it's hot on the outside. It's hot everywhere.
It's hot.
It's hot. It's just hot.
I'm having my first pregnancy during this summer.
So oh, Rhiannon.
That is fun.
What have you done that for?
I know, that was stupid. So stupid.
I know. Just press pause.
I know, just say, yes. Don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
When is the baby coming?
October, so it's fine. It'll be cool when
did
it
you
comes.
Have a good Christmas?
I only got married at Christmas. We can't
good.
Go into that
you
now.
You did have a good Christmas.
Yeah.
You had a great New Year.
Yeah,
we can't talk about it. Oh, yeah, I've been good at maths. Yeah, good New Year.
I was wondering when I'd start blushing and it's already happened. So.
Sorry.
No, thank
sorry.
You. We're here to listen to your best advice. So I'm going to take it in turns. You guys are going to give three pieces of advice that you've been given throughout your life.
Yeah.
Fee, should we start with you? What's one of the best pieces of advice you've ever been given?
So one of the best pieces of advice I've ever been given is to only ever take advice from somebody's life you would happily be leading. And actually, it's one of those pieces of advice you kind of think, oh, well, that's a bit of a given, isn't it? But it's not, because we buy self-help books written by people who live in different continents, different gender, different aims, different ambitions. Why on earth would what they advise you to do be right for you? So only listen to the people whose lives you'd steal quite happily.
Whose life would you steal? Who are you happy to hear from?
Oh, so I've got one friend called Kath, and she's one of those beautifully wise people anyway. And her life is, I mean, you know, it's not without stresses and strains like everybody's. But she just seems to make very good decisions and warm-hearted, compassionate decisions. And I'd happily live her life. She doesn't know this, by the way.
She does now.
She's now phoning the security guards. So it took me quite a long time to realise that, actually. Mm. That, you know, people give advice all the time, but if they have a different life to yours, why on earth would it be any good for you?
So you wouldn't be turning to any kind of, like, Facebook execs for life advice. You're not living that Silicon Valley lifestyle, that kind of thing.
No. And that's exactly the point as well, isn't it? That I'm sure it really works for, you know, Silicon Valley unicorns like Jack Dorsey to only eat once a day and, you know, meditate for early morning dawn choruses and all of that kind of stuff. But I'm not him. So, you know, what he does that makes his Twitter sphere wonderful is not what I need to do to make mine better.
I think that's really lost in these self-help times. I think I like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Jane, your first piece of advice is about who to take advice from as well.
Yeah, it's almost like we think along the same lines. I don't think along. I don't even know her. Yeah, I've written here, and I can hardly see it because I haven't got my glasses. Don't take advice from someone who offers it without being asked.
Mm.
Okay, so I think this is probably harking back to my adolescence, where I felt, even if I wasn't, I felt like I was surrounded by people who knew what was what and couldn't wait to impart their wisdom. And a lot of these people were almost certainly men. Yes, I know it's come as a shock, but I think it's not that I've got a downer on men. They just really irritate me from time to time. And I'm still having stuff mansplained to me, which is such a cheek. I was at a party the other week when a man, I think I mentioned this on our highly successful podcast, Fortunately, when a man did actually spend half an hour telling me why women lack confidence.
I heard you say that.
And it's true.
Mad.
It actually happened. And I just, if you just shut up, I could maybe begin to explain why sometimes it's difficult for women to be confident. Anyway, he didn't. And he, very nice man, actually, I should say, and almost certainly would be blushing if he knew this was about him.
Really?
But of course, he lacks the self-awareness to appreciate. We've always said, in fact, we said, unfortunately, that there is a BBC self-awareness course, but the people who need it wouldn't, of course, sign up for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a long way from my advice about not taking advice. I think there are some wise people in everybody's lives, and I actually really value the wisdom of older women. And I grew up with my grandmother living in the house. I think that was hugely significant, actually. I realise now just how significant it probably was. Mm. It was nice to get the older person's perspective. It was also nice to help her into her corset. It's left me with a lifelong admiration for the corset.
God.
And also just an awareness that the human body changes.
Yeah.
And that I was on holiday last week in Greece, and it was actually really liberating to see the wonderful different body shapes on the beach. And sometimes we get so bound up in this country, and particularly I've got two daughters. I am concerned about body image and the way they're meant to think about how they look. It's brilliant. You go to the Med and on the beach, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, are the older people, women and men, and the women are still rocking their bikinis, and it's Greece, so they're also smoking fags. And they're standing there, and I just think, I want to be you. When I'm 75, I want, madam, to be you.
Yeah.
And the hairy, very hairy old men in very tiny budgie smugglers.
Yeah.
But they just looked fantastic.
Yeah,
and you'll be there.
And they don't care. Yeah. I won't be that hairy. Well, actually.
I do think that's what's great about your guys' podcast is you were talking about getting advice from older women, you were saying.
Mm.
And I think it's great to have both of you there. You don't always...
Are you saying we're old?
No, I was very careful not to say
the implication.
I was repeating your words.
Yes, okay.
And I just think it's, you know, to have you two out there and you're talking and you're, you know, so at the top of your game. I mean, do you get asked for advice from younger women constantly about career advice?
Actually, funnily enough, just before I came, we just done a podcast with Susanna Reid, who was amazing, who's the GMB presenter, and we really enjoyed chatting to her. But before that, I'd had a drink with one of my mentees at the BBC, and this is a scheme where older women can help younger women, slightly younger women, just sort of coming up in the BBC and just spend time with them occasionally. And it was, they do, and I think this is a really, really positive thing. Mm. And I'm 54, and when I was starting out at the BBC, these sorts of initiatives did not exist, did they? I mean, to be perfectly honest, the generation above me did not choose to reach down to help those of us who were trying to get there. But in fact, I think that was because they weren't encouraged to, for a start, and we are now encouraged to, and rightly, but also because I think they felt so vulnerable in their position that they were too busy guarding their place in the working world and didn't actually feel that they could assist young shavers like I was in those days to make my way up. Do you think that's true?
Yes, and also I think because it was really, by comparison to now, very rare for women to be successful on air for a very long time. That there was a feeling that actually there was no path to it.
Mm.
You know, the women who had got there were quite strange, ambitious lionesses. They weren't part of
a sisterhood.
Whole kind of sisterhood.
No.
So, you know, there wasn't a feeling that they could create a system around them that would benefit other women. So likewise, I've got a couple of mentees through the BBC scheme and actually a couple of others. And the one thing that I would say as well about any kind of intergenerational passing on of wisdom is it is a two-way thing, because I have genuinely learned stuff from the young sisters where I've gone away really grateful to know them, because I think the generation below us comes from a very different place that we come from in terms of their landscape, horizon, sense of equality, all of that. And I love meeting them, you know, probably more than they love meeting me, but it's great. It's
great. Oh, come on, darling.
Well,
yeah, you're right. No, you're right. I also think it's really important that we spend time with younger women who are not white. Just because I think that this is still a white place. I am white, he is white. It's definitely changing, and that's good. But I think there is no doubt their experience of the BBC is a very different one to my own, and I would also argue it's still harder.
Yeah.
So the statistics would bear you out.
Yes, I think they would. Mm.
Fee, your yes. next piece of advice. I could talk about with that with you all day, guys, but it was about...
You moved on very swiftly there, Rhiannon.
raising your children.
So this was a piece of advice given to me by the fantastic writer and psychologist Dorothy Rowe, and she came on a programme that I did years ago, and we were talking about parenting because some of her work is about parenting. She's very, very good about mental health. And she said there are 1,000 ways to raise a child, but there'll only be one that suits you. Mm-hmm. And I had really young kids at the time, so probably 6 months old and 3. And that is quite a grueling time for parenting because maybe other people are wiser or better at it. But I felt that I was in an absolute... I was still in the cake mix. I was nowhere near even getting into the oven to sort out, you know, the parenting cake. So I, when she said that, I just thought, oh, bless you, because it can be so confusing these days. The image of parenting is sold to you in a very perfect way, and it is so far from that, and you need to find your own path and then be confident in sticking to it. And that is a lovely kind of ever increasing circle once you think, yep, it's just me. And I'm going to make my decisions, informed decisions, but they're going to be my decisions. And if somebody else really does value Japanese jujitsu at the age of 2.5, or is managing to, you know, get their 6-month-old to sleep through the night, or all of these things that you can become incredibly anxious about, a little bit of knowing that actually you're just trying as hard as you can and slightly cocking up most of the time, but that's fine. So I was very grateful to her for that. Very grateful. And I actually say to my kids now when they criticise my
They're parents, both in prison, your kids.
I say to them, you'll do a better job than me. Mm. And they love me saying that because it kind of passes it on to them already. It's just like, you know, I'm getting this wrong. You'll do much better. I can't wait to see it.
Are you both happy to talk about being mothers at work? We were talking about this in our office the other day, the debate about whether you should talk about being a mother or whether you should leave it at the door. How do you guys feel about that?
God, well, you go first on that one.
I know it's supposed to be true that a lot of male workers, men, I think the term I'm groping for, men will put up photographs of their kids or their families in the office or work setting. Obviously not everybody works in an office, but you know what I mean. Whereas equivalent women might be more reluctant to do it. The men do it because they believe it humanises them. The women think, oh, if I do that, people will put me in a certain place.
But also the men might not be doing it. Because
no, they might not be.
They
at
might
all. No,
be
no,
genuinely
I'm not.
Missing their kids and want to see no. them there.
Of course
that's
they
judgy. That's no. judgy.
I'm just saying it's a theory.
Okay.
I'm very fortunate. I obviously work on a program where we do talk about women's lives. Mm. And let's face it, a lot of women have children, though certainly not all our listeners, by the way. And interestingly, I am born in the year, I think it's 1964, where I think 25% of the women in the year I was born have not had children, and obviously now okay. will not have children, almost certainly. Obviously, I know there are ways and means. And of course, you can adopt children at any age. I appreciate that. So you know what I mean when I say that. Will not give birth to children. And that is significant. So that's a big chunk of the population whose lives will be child-free, not necessarily childless, but child-free. So Women's Hour tries to bear that in mind. Also, that generation of women without children faces the challenge of how they will age and who will care for them in their old age, which, of course, slightly makes the assumption that my two daughters will really, really want to wipe my bottom in 30 years' time. And I suspect neither of them will, and I wouldn't blame them. But you know what I mean? That's another challenge. But I'm absolutely happy to discuss being a mother, and it is without question the best thing I've ever done, the greatest challenge, the hardest thing. But I would also say the pleasure I have got out of my children, and I was going to say their achievements, but by achievements, I mean making friends.
Surviving.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the thrill of my eldest child coming home from school and telling me another kid had invited her round to play. Yeah. And you get that, oh, you think somebody else likes my child. And it feels, you just think, oh, the relief. It's a really lovely thing. And, you know, some people are academic, some people aren't. Who cares whether your kids get 9 GCSE A stars or number 9s or whatever it is. Ultimately, if they're healthy and they make you laugh and you occasionally make them laugh, you're in for a treat, Rhiannon.
Oh, good.
Yes, you're, no, it's a good, good thing. And I'm very, very happy to talk about it.
But I think the point about whether or not you want to be identified as a mother is really interesting. And I think in the next generation, that may well change because, you know, the 50-something woman, of which we're both in that category, I suspect has had a harder time making that blend of motherhood and career work than I hope the younger generation will have. And I hope all it really boils down to is people being sensitive about when it's right to have the conversation about what you are outside work and, you know, people who might not want that conversation to be had in their presence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it shouldn't really matter. Sometimes I think if we just replace the word motherhood with parenting, we'd all be better off anyway. And lots of blokes would definitely benefit from talking about their kids at work a little bit more and from being a dad and bringing all of that stuff into work. And I think that will change. I think too many women have felt that they can't talk about motherhood because it is immediately meant that people look at them in a pejorative way at work. And I hope that's...
But I think in a way, you know, that leads to us not celebrating the... I mean, it's beyond magic, beyond magical, that moment when your child, if you're very fortunate, you have a healthy child and that you're given that child in that extraordinary... I mean, I was drugged up to the eyeballs on both occasions, I should say. I mean, I'd had cesarean.
That's why it was magic.
It was really, I tell you what, it wasn't the kids, it was actually the drugs. No, you look at these little, squally little things and just think, oh, first of all, you think, oh, God, what have I done? But then it is just, I mean, I'm afraid, I feel sorry for men because they will not know. They will not know how heady and intoxicating and beyond any kind of ability of mine to put it into words, that moment is. So I think it's a jolly good thing. And I think if men gave birth, there'd be programmes on television 24 hours a day celebrating their ability to bring forth humanity. But strangely, instead of which, we just have endless men poking their spherical objects into nets. By poking, I mean propelling.
Yes.
By propelling, okay. I mean, what do I mean?
But don't you think that if we let men celebrate being parents a bit more, being dads a bit more, then they could, I don't know, just join in and have the same conversation with them?
Oh, yeah, no, of course. And I should say as well, I mean, my own dad was the kind of, he's still alive, I should say, talk about him in the past tense, is the kind of man who would put on his anorak at 2 a.m. and come and get me from somewhere. And that's being a dad. It's not all about... My dad would no more talk in emotional terms about fatherhood than I would fly to Uranus. But he is a proper dad.
Yes.
And there's a lot to celebrate. And they've a lot to be a lot the proper dads have got a lot to be proud of.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Grazia and Number 7, who are introducing their new Matchmade Custom Blend Foundation Drops. With more than 80 years of experience in skincare, Number 7 have a unique understanding of a woman's skin and have now used that knowledge to create Matchmade Custom Blend Foundation Drops, a new innovative product that allows new levels of makeup personalization. One product, but with endless possibilities, the drops are available in 25 Matchmade shades. All you need to do is take your Number 7 moisturizer or primer and in your hand add 1, 2, or 3 drops. Mix it together and apply to give you seamless light, medium, or full coverage. Exclusively at Boots, Number 7's new Matchmade Custom Blend Foundation Drops are available online and in-store now. You can also go into store for a free Matchmade skin tone analysis to discover an even better foundation match. Try Number 7's Matchmade Custom Blend Foundation Drops now for makeup that allows you to wear it your way. Back to Fee and Jane.
Your next piece of
We haven't finished at all yet. Let's go on, Fran. Well, my next piece of advice, absurdly, is don't eat cheese scones. That's partly because I grew up in the 70s in Liverpool and my primary school lunches were things that I still have nightmares about. There were absolute... I mean, I don't know how much the budget was for the Liverpool primary school lunches back in 1972 or three. It can't have been a lot. This is probably before decimalisation, so possibly one old penny was, but they were hideous. I particularly hated Irish stew, and the only way to get that down your neck was to shovel loads of red cabbage in with it.
No.
Yeah, I know. Fee, this was terrible. This is Dickensian. It really was. And cheese scones did feature every now and again. And they are horrible things because you bite into them anticipating a relatively sweet snack, instead of which you get the horrendous tang, and I like cheese, but the unexpected tang of cheese. It's the unexpected nature of the flavour that means that they must be avoided at all costs.
Gosh. I think this might be one of the most controversial things you've ever said.
I am.
People love cheese scones.
No, they don't. Really. That's nonsense.
No, I'm butter. With you. No, with you. I would much rather have a savoury scone than a sweet scone.
Would you?
Oh,
you're so peculiar.
Every day. Yep. Definitely, especially...
Our podcast is off.
Is it? It's cancelled.
Yes.
If you've managed to get the cheese nice and evenly distributed... Mm. And then you've got a lovely, crunchy, melted cheesy bit on top.
That's absolutely repellent. Cheese belongs on toast. It does not belong anywhere near a scone or in a scone mix.
This is the difference between us. We've suddenly realised the chasm widens.
It's why I'm successful.
And I'm lactose intolerant.
I feel guilty that I've drawn this massive wedge between you.
Yeah. Don't believe her. She's got no real emotions at all.
Should we move on to the next piece of advice
quickly.
Or is anything else?
No, we're done on cheese scones.
Fee, what's your next piece of advice?
Well, never trust a man with a beret. I mean, just there's no explanation to it at all. But I mean, it's a cocky, jaunty little hat. It's not a proper hat that's going to protect you from the rain.
No.
It's fiddly. It's worn in just, it's always worn in a very pretentious way, either by revolutionaries, Frenchmen, people who are embarrassed about losing their hair. Don't be embarrassed. Women, they just couldn't.
We don't care. No.
You don't care about our cellulite. We don't care about your baldness.
No.
Come on, let's party. So just the beret, no. No.
Did you get a
no.
lot of those in Hackney?
No. In Hackney, berets, no, because they're... The young Hackney man is sporting a very wide-brimmed fedora.
Oh, is he? Yes. Okay. Heavily bearded, but with a wide-brimmed fedora. Okay.
And imagine if you were heavily bearded with a beanie on top. I mean, that's just not going to work.
Also, it's far too hot for beanie hats and things like that at the moment, but the only man who really looks good in one of those hats is David Beckham. But a lot of other men try them.
Yes.
Come sort of November, maybe late October, you'll see these beanie hats on the street. And really, it's only Dave. Nobody else needs to go anywhere close to trying.
Yeah,
I feel very strongly about that.
So men should just be very careful about hattage.
Okay. Yeah.
Very.
What about women in berets? Also no.
Well, that's a bit queer, isn't it? I don't know why you would.
Didn't the Brownies have a beret at one time?
Oh,
yeah,
I think they did. I don't think we had a hat in the Brownies at all.
Yeah, they did. They had a brown beanie, but I think before that there was a beret. I'm older than you. I've lived through some difficult times.
I'm just glad that you've bonded over the beret again. And
after that awful cheese scone business.
Yeah, so you put it up again. So, thank you. So no berets.
Okay, that's taken.
Done.
Yes.
I think we can agree.
Good.
Jane, your final piece of best advice you've ever been given.
Yeah, do change your sheets. Now, this comes back actually to the beginning of my time on Woman's Hour. It was 1875. Queen Victoria was settling onto the throne. She still had many decades to do. I can't remember when. Anyway, we did an item, and I can't remember why, about sheets, but this is Woman's Hour. Rich tapestry is woven, not always terribly successfully, but that day we were talking about sheets, and I said... And I've always regretted it, that in my guest bedroom, it was at a time in my life when, for example, my young nephews would come and stay. And then sometimes they'd come and stay and maybe I'd have a friend come to stay during the week. I wouldn't always change the sheets between my very young, very clean nephews and perhaps one of my female friends who was in London for the night and needed a bed. And I just said, I don't always change because, you know, they're all... doesn't really matter. And it just... the emails flooded in. Why was this slot being allowed to present my favourite radio program? I was already pretty unpopular purely on the basis I wasn't Jenny Murray. And this was just I'd gone too far now with Woman's Hour's core audience. And so since then, I have made it my business to become much more scrupulous in that department. And so I always now launder sheets between visitors. I do. My own sheets, I used to leave sometimes for 2 weeks.
Right.
I have been known to go for 3. Those days are well gone.
Every week now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm haunted by that, actually.
It is the worst job in the house, doing the duvet and the inside boring. Out and... Yeah.
Oh, I mean, there's no. You're lucky. You're young. You wait till you're in a menopausal flurry and you get involved in one of those duvet cover related incidents.
Yeah.
There's never a good time to do that. But if you're hot and you're bothered, you can find yourself trapped within the quilt.
Oh, it can make you cry.
It can. It can really make you close to wanting to burst into tears. Yeah. We'll laugh about the duvet when it's finally obliterated.
Yeah.
But we're still. I remember my grandmother. Just expressing complete amazement that people were happy to wave goodbye to that bizarre sheet, blanket, eiderdown, top cover arrangement in favour of the duvet. And I thought my nan was mad at the time, but now I think she was probably right.
Mm.
Yeah.
I quite favour if people are coming to stay in quick succession.
Do you all just go in the same bed? No.
No, not that liberated, even for Hackney. Mm. It's just putting a little sheet on. So you can keep the. So you don't have to keep changing the duvet cover. You just change the sheet.
Yes, I know people do that. The sheet that. So you have a sheet between your guest and the duvet.
Yes. So you don't have to get involved in the duvet disaster.
Yeah.
It's tricky, but also we shouldn't waste too much time on it, should we?
No, I think this is important.
Do you? Sorry.
Never mind Brexit. This is the issue that get people going.
Well, this is what I was going to say to you. It got people going, and there's something about radio that makes people think they can all get involved and tell you you're totally wrong. How do you take constantly being questioned by people who are listening to you, shall we say?
Well, I mean, every single day, I look at the Woman's Hour Twitter feed, every single day someone says, I am never listening to this dross again. And that's fine. Often it's the same people. So I've got news for them. They haven't stopped listening. But sometimes if it's very personal. So sometimes we'll be looking at our emails during the course of the programme. My colleagues in the production studio will be looking at the emails that have come in to see if there's any worth reading out in our podcast edition. And sometimes they will put on the screen, which I can also see, an email that is just full of criticism of me, just saying, I hate that jingle. You're so stupid. And I will look at it and think, ooh. And I try not to be hurt by it, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't.
Mm.
And that can be, I don't know what it is. I know we always say laughingly, there's no reaction worse than no reaction at all. But and that is the worst reaction.
No, that would be very pleasant to have no reaction at all.
Yes, yeah, sometimes
both you
I would
and I
take.
Started
yeah,
work because we are quite old. At a time when there wasn't this intense interaction, so radio was pretty much a one-way form of media.
We talked at them.
Yeah, and then very occasionally, we both started in local radio. You know, you'd bump into somebody in the supermarket, you know, who was a super fan or a super critic, and you'd actually have a conversation with them about it. But the being able to criticise or praise just at the touch of a button has transformed radio, definitely for the better. You can't imagine doing a radio programme anymore where you weren't asking for constant feedback.
Well, there are still some on Radio 4 that are.
That's true.
Completely without any interaction with an, or even any acknowledgement that there is an audience. Let's face it, there are some shows on Radio 4 that I don't think do have an audience. Anyway.
in an attempt to keep our jobs.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that, yeah.
Yes, that. Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be really unnatural not to have a perfectly human reaction to both those things. Mm. So I think praise is always lovely and criticism stings. And it should always be that way, because otherwise you've gone mad and you've gone back to the time at which... Do you want to get that?
It's my friend. Yeah, she's in the building going to a meeting.
Is she? Yeah. Does she want to come along?
No, she can't come here. I'll have to send her a message.
Okay.
I'm on my way. No, that's not the right message.
So I think it's perfectly... I don't, you know... I don't mind it, and I wouldn't want to go back to the time when you just didn't know what people were thinking of everything you had on your show. So it's a good thing, I think. But, you know, when somebody says, get that arse off, then, of course, I think, sadly, there's a little bit in most decent people that just thinks, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I should go now.
It is astonishing to think about a lack of a complete absence of interactivity. But there really was a time.
I
started in local radio in Herefordshire and Worcestershire, and my only real interaction was with the audience would be handwritten letters and people coming to reception with cream for me from their farms. I'm serious.
That's lovely.
And it is lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's why I'm now 27 today. never mind. It's all Herefordshire cream. Yeah. Great.
We like to finish the show by getting people to tell us the worst piece of advice they've ever been given. Because as you were saying earlier, people love throwing it at you.
Yeah.
So, V, you were saying that you were told to go and work in local government.
Yeah. So my careers advisor at school, you know, he also doubled up as a teacher of several other subjects. Careers was not his speciality.
Well, it wasn't back then, was it?
No, it wasn't. And we had a careers library, which was just basically one of those revolving bookshelves. That was it. Anyway, fair enough. Times have changed. All for the good. So I said I wanted to go and do a degree in local government and infrastructure at the London School of Economics. And she said, yeah, that's brilliant. That'll suit you down to a T. And there is not one single thing in that sentence that was right or correct. Or she just couldn't wait to get me out of the door. But I just would have been, I mean, what an absolute mismatch of a degree that would have been. I would have contributed nothing to local government. No council would have benefited from the expertise that I didn't get, because I didn't get the grades to go to the MSc.
But chief executives in local government make a fortune.
Yeah, but in terms of
they earn more than the prime minister.
Skill set, I've got nothing. No. Nothing to offer.
Oh, no organisational ability?
No. Or the detail, or the vision, or the ability to sit through meetings without talking myself. None of it. Absolutely none of it.
Mm.
So I do say to my kids, you know, who are just beginning to ask questions about, you know, what do you think I should do? And I always say, don't ask anyone. Mm. You know, don't really, or don't take any notice of what people say. You know, you will find something, you'll see a little something, and nobody else will really understand why you like it. But I'm certainly not going to try and encourage them to be one thing or t'other. And also, the jobs that they do have not yet been made. So
they haven't been invented.
They've not been invented.
No, that much we do know about the future.
Yeah.
We know that we don't know about it.
We're so wise.
Which in the past we thought we used to... Because I've been, all my life, I've been promised moving pavements. And I'm 54 and I'm still having to make the effort to walk along a pavement myself.
It's so true.
No, but it is true about moving pavements, yeah. Isn't it?
But also jetpacks.
Oh, and jetpacks.
We promised that we could just...
Holidays on the moon.
Yep. We could basically somehow process our farts to make us super zoom from London to Birmingham with only...
Well, you probably could.
Stop it. You said you'd never tell anyone about that.
You wouldn't believe the details she's just gone into on our podcast anyway. I'm just struggling to think about the worst advice. I know, probably echoing Fee's point about careers, I would say my mum had an unhealthy obsession with me working for the Midland Bank. And she would... My mother was an NHS clerk, and she worked as the clerk in a venereal disease clinic, which obviously took her... she met a particular cross-section of... sexually active local society.
lots of stories.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, she isn't the most discreet woman on earth. So I can't go there, but I can tell you who had chlamydia and in Liverpool. Including some quite fun. I'll let you know when we stop recording. So and to be fair, and seriously for a minute, I think a lot of people of my parents' generation worked not for pleasure but for a living, as indeed the vast majority of people do, and we should never forget that. And one of the brilliant things about what I do, and what Fee I'm sure would agree, is that I wake up pretty much every day of my working life and think, good, I'm going to work.
Yeah, I'd echo that.
It's the most... I think if you're not grateful for that, you need to really seriously rethink. But what I would say is that... my parents are perhaps a little bit reticent socially. They don't like people who big themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, to my cost, realised that actually it won't do you any favours, that you actually do have to be prepared to put yourself out there. That may well mean that you get knocked back.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm afraid nobody in life actually, whether professionally or in any other way, will come looking for you. You sort of have to let them know that you're available. So I would say my parents' well-intentioned advice when I was a kid possibly hasn't been tremendously helpful. And my mum did give me lots of leaflets about working in the Midland Bank. And I did always say, Mum, I don't want to work in any bank. What's happened to the Midland Bank, by the way? Is it now part of...
I think it's
merged or been...
It's best to never ask a question about a bank.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yes.
Because we probably bailed it out or something.
Probably. Something. I think it might be part of HSBC. This isn't of interest to your listeners.
I was going to say quickly, though, that it is something specifically that's a female problem, that we're told a lot that we're not as good at bigging ourselves up as men.
Well, I'm afraid my own career path does back that up. That unfortunately, and by the way, I also will make judgments about women who do big themselves up. And I'll think, oh, hark at her. Do you do that? I'd never voice it, I should say, but it'll be going on in my head. I'll be thinking, who does she think she is banging on about herself there? Of course, she's doing exactly the right thing, actually. But I've still got that little voice in my head saying, oh, you shouldn't do that. You should be modest.
Modest
men don't bother with that. And good. And by the way, men are right not to bother with it, actually. It's one of the things I admire a lot.
Yep, I'd agree.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Shav. Absolutely loved talking to you. And I think loads of great advice in there.
Well, we went way off track. I can only apologise.
Yeah, best advice is don't listen to us.
Yeah. don't ask us for advice.
Apart from the podcast, you should listen to your podcast, fortunately.
Just join in when the guest arrives.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Fee and Jane. If you enjoyed that, you'll definitely enjoy hearing their podcast, fortunately. It's back on Friday and then comes out Fridays after that and is available to download via the BBC iPlayer app or wherever you go for your podcasts. This week's podcast was brought to you by Number 7, exclusively at Boots. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe, rate us, review us. It really helps spread the word. We look forward to seeing you next week for more advice from women worth listening to.
Grab some friends and an ice-cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew!